You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, June 3rd, 2016. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. You know what that means. It means Cliff Schechter will be joining us. Also on the program today, ostensibly to give us a movie suggestion for the weekend, comedian, rock star, author, Dave Hill will be joining us. Also on the program today, Trump and the media. Has CNN cracked the code? Clinton gives a foreign policy speech. Has she cracked the code? Meanwhile, speaking of Clinton, neck and neck in California, according to the latest field poll. That's the most reliable one.
I'm coming for you.
Meanwhile, Paul Ryan comes home to that warm embrace of Donald Trump. And Donald Trump, meanwhile, tries to embrace Susana Martinez. Meanwhile, protests get violent in San Jose, anti-Trump protests. Also had horrible job numbers this month, the worst since 2010. Past couple of months also been revised down. And David French, the other white meat. Speaking of which, Debbie Wasserman Schultz reverses herself on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's payday loan regulations.
We still don't like her.
And finally, is King Tut from outer space?
Well, not exactly, but I'll explain that to you later.
All right. Well, we will look forward to that. All that and more, ladies and gentlemen, on this casual Friday. Let's just get this sound out of the way. This is so disturbing in some ways. Rick Perry on Fox News. Rick Perry, you remember Rick Perry? He was the 2012 nominee. Oops, no, I'm sorry, he wasn't. He was just a guy who's not very bright, who ran in 2012.
The guy who makes George W. Bush look like a Mensa member.
Yeah, exactly. Here he is on Fox, basically auditioning to be Donald Trump's VP. That's what this is about. And there's two things that are really disturbing about it. The first is, he's basically wearing the exact same outfit that I wear when I go on TV. Now, like, I got that new shirt, the check shirt, and I wear like a tie. His tie is a little wider than mine, but we, you know, he's now wearing the glasses to get the cedar look, I guess, to come off as like Jewy. I mean, the real question with this guy is, I mean, how did he get through algebra with the, the second really disturbing thing about this video is not what he's wearing, but what he says. And I don't know. Maybe this, I mean, is this guy really auditioning to be Trump's VP, or is he auditioning just to be considered the creepiest, dumbest guy in America who gets on TV? Here we go.
It's very easy to attack when you have the stage all to yourself and she's standing up there with prepared remarks, but put her on a debate stage next to Donald Trump. Then what happens, you think?
Well, we'll see, again, a real fracture. You'll see exposure. You'll see an individual that's really not been used to taking that type of criticism. I mean, what's it been? Months and months since she's even had a press conference and does not want to take hard questions from the media.
Can we pause it for 1 second? Somebody should introduce this guy to the concept of glass houses. He can barely answer this question, and it's from Freddie. They're quoting him and just saying, expand on this question. He seems completely off base by it.
Oh, well, hold on I got you.
But go ahead.
Trump will peel her skin off Donald Trump will peel her skin off in a debate setting, and actually he'll peel it off this evening out in San Jose as well. And the people of this country are really concerned about an individual when you have Benghazi, when you have the email scandals, when you have the Clinton Foundation scandals. You want to talk about issues that really cut to the real heart of Washington, D.C., and the insiders that Bill and Hillary Clinton represent.
Okay. All right. I mean, so there he is. Donald Trump's going to peel her skin off. And then instead of like realizing like, ooh, that may not be an appropriate thing to say about anybody. I mean, I don't know in what context he's going to peel her skin off. Then he comes back and he's like, let me see if I can reinforce that. In fact, he's going to peel her skin off tonight.
What happened was his aides were off camera frantically being like, no, no.
Oh, and he thought
interpreted
they were saying,
it as,
again,
yes,
again.
Do it again. Brilliant.
And then he goes in and then like, I mean, I think there's really, this is a cry for help because then like 10 seconds later, he's going like, you know, I really think this cuts to the heart. I mean, he's really just, this is a guy, didn't he like blow up cats or something like that? Or is that George Allen or something like that?
I know it's George Allen.
Yeah, but I don't, there's a problem there with him. And I like how he can dress him up as a metrosexual, but from one metrosexual to another, it ain't working, buddy.
You ever see Hostel, the movie?
Speaking of metrosexual, though, I know a lot of people look at me and say, hey, you don't dress very well. Well, okay, that may be the case. I don't dress very well on the outside, but on the inside, well, not really the inside. I mean, the in-between layer, I dress well. Now that I've got me undies. Honestly, and I tried to do this last time, nothing can describe the fit and feel of me undies. It's like you're wearing nothing, but you're also wearing something. I don't know. I guess that's why they're called the world's most comfortable underwear. The way I describe it is like you're wearing nothing, but you feel like you're wearing something. And here's the best. I'm not saying this is the best part about MeUndies, but it is. It's the slam dunk of this offer. Okay. If you don't love your first pair of MeUndies, they're free. No questions asked. You just tell them you want a refund. MeUndies has dozens of styles, limited edition prints to help you make your statement with your underwear. You know, whether anyone can see them or not. Doesn't matter. At least you know. Shipping is free in the U.S. and Canada. You can save up to $8 a pair with MeUndies subscription plan. They are made out of modal. We already have heard from Matt. He was on this modal thing about, I don't know, 3 years ago. He swears by it.
About since 2011.
Okay, 5 years ago. Wow. Jeez.
I didn't know they were around that long. Wow.
Get the subscription or single pair, and you will get 20% off your first order when you go to MeUndies.com/majority. That's MeUndies.com/majority for 20% off your first order. MeUndies.com/majority. MeUndies is MeUndies.com/majority. Check it out. 20% off. If you don't like them, I mean, you don't pay. It's a pretty good deal. It's a great deal. We're going to get to Cliff in just a moment. He's running just a tad late, but we will get to him as well. And just, next week, I should tell you, David Dayan is going to be in studio. He is in New York promoting his book. And make sure you tune in for that next week. I'm very excited about it. We've never had him in studio. What's that?
Next Friday?
Yeah, next Friday. Exciting. Also, folks, don't forget Ring of Fire, the show that I do with Mike Papantonio and Bobby Kennedy Jr., is up for a podcast award. We're not eligible because we've won too many times.
They're tired of it.
Yeah, I don't get how that works, but whatever. But go over to podcastawards.com, news and politics. You can vote for Ring of Fire every day. Make sure you do. Also, Father's Day is coming up, and the response to this offer was pretty big. In fact, I was a little bit surprised by it, to be honest with you. You don't have a sense necessarily of what people are going to be excited about. And so we're going to include this with the members today and today only. This one, because I had one member who listened to the show live and was like, you should include that for the members because people are going to want this deal. It's a father. I mean, it doesn't have to be for Father's Day. Nobody's going to know. But Omaha Steaks, celebrating Father's Day for only $49.99 plus shipping. But still, you'll see, it's an amazing deal. You can get my limited time Father's Day package when you go to omahasteaks.com and enter report in the search bar to apply the savings. So when you first get there, you got to put report in the search bar. It's not a coupon code situation. You put report in the search bar. Omaha Steaks offer everything you could want to grill. The best cuts of beef, bison from the Golden Plains, seafood, poultry. They'll even customize the cuts for your dad. Right now, Omaha Steaks is giving a limited time offer to my listeners for Father's Day. Now, I've had literally three or four people. You can check my Twitter feed, and I think a couple of people have emailed. You'll get 80% off of Omaha Steaks Father's Day package. It includes two mild filet mignons. Those are the ones that I tried, and they were delicious. Two beefy top sirloins. I think I also took those too, and they were also great. Four chicken fried steaks. If you've never had chicken fried steaks, they're thin cuts. They're actually, I think, one of the tastiest cuts of the steak. Not as tender as the filet mignon, but incredibly tasty. Four boneless pork chops. Four all-beef Omaha steak burgers. Four award-winning gourmet jumbo franks. 12 ounces of all-beef meatballs, 1 pound of steakhouse fries, four made-from-scratch caramel apple tartlets. We have not eaten those yet. We don't know. I'm trying to avoid those because I'm trying to lose a couple pounds. One Omaha steak seasoning packet, and then you get four additional burgers. Again, you get this limited-time package for only $49.99 when you go to omahasteaks.com, type report in the search bar, add Father's Day package to your cart. Don't wait. This offer ends soon. We're almost at Father's Day. Go to omahasteaks.com, type report in the search bar, grab your dad, fire up the grill. Of course, you can cook it in the stove, too. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Cliff, you know what it just occurs to me? I should buy that for Cliff. It's just like a gift for coming on the show so much.
That's very sweet.
I probably won't, but I mean, I should.
Well, you just undercut yourself there. You should have created the illusion that you were going to do it.
No, I'm going to be honest about it. If I do it, I do it. What is he going to do? He's going to come on and not thank me on air? And then people are going to be like, that ingrate.
You never know.
Sam got him a bunch of steaks, and he didn't even come on.
There you go. That would be perfect.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with Cliff.
Need a
We are back, Sam Seder, on the Majority Report. On the phone, ladies and gentlemen, is the guy who was the inspiration to this popular tune from the, well, the, I guess, this decade.
Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it's Cliff Schachter. Hello, Cliff Schachter.
Hello, Samuel Seder. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. And, complaints that I can think of.
And you're on the road today, is that right?
I'm on the road in the middle of that vast heart-shaped state known as Ohio that may determine a presidential election. Yes, I have a Planned Parenthood board meeting because, as you know, I believe in that kind of thing.
Indeed. And, you know, we didn't have the chance to talk last week about this, but there was a judge that basically shut down the state's ability to defund Planned Parenthood. Is that right?
That is correct, which is one fantastic victory here. And then we've also had another one where in Southwest Ohio, where I am, which is Cincinnati, basically, we were in danger of becoming the largest metro area in the country. Without an abortion clinic, because they've done everything they can to use every tricky, you know, trap law to shut us down. And we needed to have something, I'm not a lawyer, but something called a variance, which would allow us to operate without one of these transfer agreements that they keep requiring. You know, it has to be somebody within the same state, within 25 miles. It can't be a public universe, a public hospital. And I mean, everything they can to shut you down. And we were granted this thing that's called a variance. So we're going to be able to keep operating.
That's
so
great.
We're not going to cost 2 million people in the metro area that right. So I'm not claiming this is where we need to be, but it's a hell of a lot better than what the alternative could have been. So two big victories against the loons on the right this week.
And I should also mention, we didn't even touch on this, but it just occurs to me, too, there was a federal judge also forced the reopening of this the early voting, too, in Ohio, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, we've had, you know, I mean, and the interesting thing, again, it kind of shows you all this, and we've all seen this before in other states, which is just how radical the right. You know, I know we're like broken records on this, but we can't tell you enough times that, you know, the judge, the Ohio Right to Life just wrote an op-ed, for example, attacking one of the judge in this variance agreement, who is like the brother of a huge CEO, who's one of the biggest Republican funders, George W. Bush appointed judge, you know, who said, you can't do this. You know, you can't shut down this clinic over. And so again, you know what I mean? It's kind of like what we've seen on the national level, where people who are once sort of considered Republicans, like David Souter, somehow become like left wing, you know, trolls to the right wingers. It's the sort of same thing here, is that you've got a legitimately conservative judge who even they've gone too far even for this judge. And I'm sure the voting rights case is another one. It's just a real reminder of how far beyond the pale we are at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating. And let's take this. Let's pivot to the Social Security thing, because when I heard this, of course, my first thought was like, hey, I can't wait to talk about this with Cliff. But, you know, there's an interesting dynamic that's happening, I think, in both parties in some respects. And that is that it's not just a function of the polarization. It is that you're starting to see. I don't recall, let's put it this way, a time where there wasn't more evidence of just how much the pull of where the people are, the gulf. You can really see the gulf between some of the politicians and the people in terms of the way the politicians are acting. I mean, there just seems to be. So, you know, and I want to get to, like, you know, the Paul Ryan stuff. I mean, what's going on with Paul Ryan and Donald Trump and Susana Martinez and this judge in the Donald Trump case is just, I think it's just incredibly fascinating. But Maybe.
Well, and I think, you know.
I was going to say, but a little bit less fascinating, but more exciting to me is Obama's speech this week, where he basically called for, not just strengthening Social Security. He said strengthen Social Security, but then he said increase and be more generous with benefits. And
that's right.
This is a big, big deal, right? I mean, in 7 years, we have gone from this guy advocating cuts to Social Security to advocating expanding it. That's huge to me.
Yep. I mean, it is. So, first of all, sometimes forget these things. So I want to disclose I've done work for Social Security Works. So let's get that out of the way.
Oh, you're in favor of Social Security? All right. Now that we've got that out of the way.
Social Security Works, darn it. And like you, exciting to me because we're the kinds of cool guys, stay up late, have drinks, thinking about Obama's speeches about Social Security.
Right.
That's just the kind of guys we are, Sam.
It's sadly true.
But true. It is a huge deal. And again, you know, don't think in any way that I'm sort of justifying the rise of Donald Trump, because I would never do that. But some of that, obviously, as other commentators have pointed out, has been because the gulf between what conservative politicians support, and again, it's not just the gulf, it's not politicians, it's conservative politicians. I mean, let's face it, even a lot of Democrats aren't to the left enough where the vast majority of the public is. And Social Security is one of these issues, because obviously with the work I did, I had access to plenty of polling, you know, where you routinely would find 80% plus of Republicans were in favor of sustaining or increasing Social Security. I'm trying to remember if it even was just increasing. It may have been 80% plus, and like 75% of Tea Party members. This is not a divisive issue to most normal people,
right,
who are not politicians. It only was when you had conservative Democrats, blue dogs, call them whatever, and the Republican Party, for the most part, with a few exceptions, opposing this, as you've had on everything from, you know, background checks on guns to medicinal marijuana to access to birth control and a lot of other things that reach 80-90% sometimes in polling. And you've had the conservative, you know, wing, really the almost entire wing of the Republican Party has been in stark opposition. And it's just shown that our system, and certainly the Republican primary system, isn't working, because clearly they're not even representing the views of a lot of their own people. And yet they continue to get reelected and put back in office. So this is, you know, this was one of those things where, you know, a half dozen years ago or so, you know, the Republican Party and even plenty of blue dogs went with this sort of the fun centristy and easy to sort of repeat slogan. And you still hear it from the Paul Ryans. Mitch McConnell still lied about it the other day and said any of our debt problems, which we don't have, by the way, but are caused by Social Security and Medicare. They still repeat this garbage as if it's true and as if most people, don't disagree with them, and B, that there's any reality to what they say, and that anybody who's an actual statistician, scientist, or anybody else who has an actual factual opinion would sit there and look at things and blame it on these programs. So, again, what Obama did, it just shows that you can move politicians, that all of the advocacy, it moved where the center of admitted opinion was on this. Opinion was always with us, but you needed that elite opinion, that public opinion, that pressure, so that in Washington, in New York, and in those kinds of places, that it was a well-known fact that where most people were in favor of increasing Social Security and realizing how important that program is. And we got there. It took a lot of work by a lot of people, but we got there.
Yeah, I mean, and let's also, I want to dig into the nuance of where the party is in terms of this, okay? In May of last year, 2015, there were 42 Democratic senators who voted in a basically largely symbolic vote. No, I mean, almost exclusively symbolic vote, but they're on the record to increase Social Security. OK, that was a big, big deal. We talked about that at the time. You have Bernie Sanders was talking about expanding Social Security. Hillary Clinton has said expand. She came out over the course of the campaign and said no cuts to Social Security, and then said perhaps expand it for for people who are in the who are in the lowest income bracket, right? And different from Bernie Sanders in that he wants to expand benefits for everyone. He wants to make it a little bit more universal in terms of your retirement. But now Obama, it's unclear what he was calling for there, it seems to me. And what I've read is that, like, they said, their spokespeople basically said, like, if you need clarification, come to us. So he's putting it out there. And in some respects, it's unclear whether or not Hillary Clinton now stands outside of what you could reasonably call the mainstream elected, you know, leadership of in terms of what they perceive, where the party is on Social Security. You and I both know where the voters are on this. And this is fascinating because, you know, it's almost as if Obama basically, I mean, to a certain extent, boxed her in. Basically said, like, here are the parameters. They're a little bit fuzzy, but there's no room for cuts here. None at all. That's completely off the table. And where you expand it or how big you expand it, you have a little bit of room there. But this is really huge, it seems to me.
Yeah.
And
well,
I don't...
Listen, and it's a reminder... Go ahead. I'll comment in a second. Sorry.
I don't know if... I mean... I don't know if it, you know, I mean, Michael and I were talking about this yesterday. He seems to think that it's a favor to her. I'm not sure why that would be, frankly, because this is going to give her less flexibility to make those deals. I don't think ultimately she would want to or could make those deals. But now she doesn't even have that flexibility to do it, because if she goes there, she is outside of every elected federal Democratic, you know, senator and former president, I guess. And
right. Well, the only holdout I remember, as I remember, right, when the Democrats voted on that bill was Tom Carper, who's the newest of new Democrats. I think was the only Democrat who voted against. I mean, Manchin voted for it.
Yep.
Haskell, Tester. You name it, from, you know, from red state and you know, more conservative Democrats, Heitkamp. So you're exactly right. I mean, it may just be that President Obama is doing a favor for her, the kind of favor that he wish they'd done for him, and she doesn't even know it.
Right.
And the truth is that if she were to run a full-throated campaign, general election campaign in favor of raising Social Security, she wants those crossover Republican voters. That's a way to get them, because they're all in favor of this. With very few exceptions. And so, you know, but and again, we've talked about this along the way, because this didn't happen overnight. None of this stuff does. But it's happening. I mean, this, you know, is up there with, you know, the 2004 votes against gay marriage to where we got to a year ago, in terms of one of the quickest and changing opinions, you know, held by the vast majority of the public, at least, you know, publicly, right? I think a lot of people were already there, but, you know, it being acknowledged publicly by politicians and others. And I think that you have to think about it along the way. It's just a reminder how important, and you and I have, you know, harped on this forever, that each individual voice is, because you can't discount the impact of an Elizabeth Warren. You can't discount the impact of a year-long presidential campaign by Bernie Sanders, where he's talked about this, you know, and probably a whole lot of other people that I'm forgetting about. That have been important. Remember the primary in Pennsylvania, where Alison Schwartz, who is the new Democrat for the governor's race, had to back up on cutting Social Security, had to come out in favor, at the very least, of protecting it, and as I remember, maybe even raising it. I'm a little fuzzy on what she, but the point is she was forced into that position, third way, which got smacked down, the moderate or conservative, whatever you want to call them, very Wall Street-y Democrats. I mean, these were all important moments along the way, and it's because people with a lot of cultural influence and a lot of a big following spoke out. And so that's why I'll say to people that there are things that you can look at the numbers and say can't get done, can't be voted in favor of, you can't get Republican votes, but never discount the importance of, over time, it's amazing what you can do in a half dozen years or 10 years in terms of completely changing opinion if you can have charismatic individuals who have the courage to step up and to speak out.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but there was also a report this week that in one of those meetings with Paul Ryan, Donald Trump basically said, "Yeah, I'm perfectly willing to cut Social Security. In fact, I think we have a moral obligation to cut Social Security. But, you know, for political reasons, I can't go out there and win a race by saying I'm going to cut Social Security and the Democrats are not. Now, who knows?
It's just a reminder, again, like how the conditions were created for a con man like Trump.
Yeah.
Because the Republicans have not been representing their people. And again, I won't justify it all. You know, it's a lot of it's racism and xenophobia and the rest. But their party, by so ignoring the concerns of a large part of their base on economic issues, created this situation where you know, all you needed was a Vladimir Putin type to step in, and that's what we've gotten done.
Yeah, I mean, but let's be honest. I don't know that I don't know how much his Social Security stuff has really swayed most of his votes, but you know,
not on its own, but when you combine it with attacks on trade deals, and you combine it with at least, you know, he switches his opinion, it seems, by the day on whether he should tax the wealthy, but he's spoken up in terms of that sometimes. I mean, when you combine a number of those things, I think that's resonating. I mean, again, you'd say it's any one factor.
Right.
It's a combination of factors, obviously, but that's played into some of it, you know, certainly.
I think so. And it's also interesting. I mean, we really get a sense of like what those conversations with Paul Ryan were about now, right? So, well, honestly, because
can you imagine Paul Ryan sitting there with his hat on backwards, you know, working out and playing with his pecs, you know, or doing the whole P90X thing. Trump sitting there stuffing his face with a burrito, saying how he loves the Hispanics, and somewhere in between, they're cutting Social Security.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that it was, I mean, maybe they just, it was over the phone. I don't know if they actually met in person, or maybe they did once and then they had subsequent phone calls. But the amazing amount of sort of like dick swinging metaphors that must have been around in that office, right? Like, I really do imagine that Paul Ryan was sitting there like with one of those grippy things and just sort of squeezing it, you know, as Trump is there. And Trump's there like with, you know, I don't know, eating like a pate out of like a just gobs. He's got a bag of it in his jacket. I have no idea, but
switching off which hair he's wearing.
Exactly. You know. And,
exactly.
But all right, so I mean, look at these outlines, right? We know Ryan was like, are you on board with Social Security? Because all of this happened over the past week and a half, where he meets with Ryan and he meets with the Republican donors and he gets these big Republican donors on board. And certainly Ryan had to sign off, and giving him the endorsement or giving the indication that he's going to get the endorsement is where Trump is going to get some of his money. He's going to get the Republican donors to sign off. This is how this all works. And so
Rubio also, I'd add into that too, his coming around and proving that the emperor has no clothes there or no principles also.
Yeah. But I mean, where's Rubio's future in the Republican Party anyways? I mean, if he's not vice president, he's just going to go on to, I think, you know, just be a lobbyist.
I've read that he may get back in. He's still got time to get in back into that Senate race.
It's possible. I mean, he's got that used car dealer down in Florida who's his big supporter or something.
Like a gazillionaire who's a supporter, right? And some of the Jeb Bush guys are also. Now, you know, he may become their guy just because Jeb is obviously done.
Do you think so? I'm joking.
I do. I mean,
I'm joking. I think Jeb is.
Oh, I thought you meant about Rubio. Do I think that?
No.
The Jeb being done thing. Yeah, I think so. I have a feeling.
I think he's going to have to wait a couple of years before he's even allowed to go back for Thanksgiving to his parents' house.
I think that's true. When you're a loser in the Bush family, I think he needs to recreate the scene from his older brother's history, drive the car in through like the front door and challenge his dad to a mano a mano fight.
Sorry, Jeb, we're canceling Thanksgiving this year. I mean, we'll send you pictures, but no, I mean, we're not getting together.
It's true. I mean, Jeb's
dad
totally,
just wants to be with his real sons.
Nobody counts like Neil Bush. Cause you know,
right.
He doesn't really count anyhow. Right. So nobody counts, you know, the sister, cause she's not a boy. So now Jeb is totally the family loser. I think there's another one too, right? Marvin or somebody.
There's a lot
of them.
But all right,
the point
so we
being that Jeb, yeah.
We also know from that Ryan conversation, right? He is he was very upset about the Susana Martinez thing, and then yesterday, Donald Trump is on record saying that he's very supportive of Susana Martinez. I mean, this guy was in her state. At a rally,
yeah.
and starts talking about all the problems in the state. Unemployment. She's got to get to work. She's got to do something about it. And then
I'll run for governor of New Mexico.
Yeah, maybe I should run. And this is in front of 8,000 people in Albuquerque. And now, just I guess maybe it was today, in a phone interview, when he was asked if he wanted Martinez's support by the New Mexican paper, I'd like to have it. I respect her. I have always liked her. And,
I mean, you know, this is going to continue to happen. I mean, the clear point that all these jokers who are like talking about Donald Trump acting presidential is that he's a, you know, he's a psychologically damaged individual. He cannot change his behavior. Anybody who does not, I mean, he has his closest advisor still call him Mr. Trump, right? I mean, the point is anybody who does not bow down to him, does not show him gratitude, love, thanks, appreciation, and any of the other number of things, he's going to rip into. So it may be Susana Martinez at the moment, but, you know, just the way it was Rubio at one point. But this is going to continue to happen. I mean, however much presidential they think the guy's going to act, all it takes is somebody withholding their support, you know, not endorsing it, you know, and there's a number of them, right? I mean, Ileana Ross-Lehtinen, you know, the congresswoman, Curbelo, also in Florida, you know, is another one. They've refused to endorse. The head of the Latina outreach, I think, just resigned at the RNC because she just couldn't do it anymore. I mean, so he's going to go to these people's states because these are general election swing states, and they're not going to show up, and it's going to piss him off, and he's going to insult them. He can't help himself.
Well, I have a different take on this. I think what he did was very, I think it was very strategic. I think he wanted to make a show of Susana Martinez. This is what happens if you don't. I don't think it was just that he was mad. I think it's I think this is his MO. He will separate her from the herd and will give her a beatdown. And it seems to have been quite effective. And so, and I think his coming out and saying, I respect her in this phone interview, I'm quite convinced was one of the boxes that Paul Ryan made him check off. I think Paul Ryan needed to go back to the donors and to his basically his caucus and say Trump will cut Social Security, and I think to the Republican establishment that is trying in some way not to alienate Latinos. I mean, I just don't know how. You just don't give up, you know, throw your hands up and just say, we're doomed. But, you know, Ryan's doing it. He came out today. Ryan today was told about, you know, Trump had those comments on that Judge Curiel about, like, hey, he's Mexican. He's conflicted because I'm going to build a wall in his parents' ancestral home. And Ryan was just like,
remember if the Supreme Court decides against him, I'm sure it's just all Sotomayor's fault.
Right. Well,
I mean, that's the thing, though, Sam. I mean, that's why I disagree with you on this. I mean, it may have been calculated by Trump. I mean, I'm not saying he did it on the spur of the moment. He may have been planning it, but I don't see how it's a success for him. Susana Martinez, unless I haven't seen it, has still not come out and supported him. She said nothing. And my guess is she's less likely to now. And you're going to have a lot of people, Republicans, who are Latina, who are, you know, the mayor of Miami. I mean, there's all these – they're never going to support him. So, I mean, Ryan may meet with him, and he may say, okay, I won't insult her again and do that. But do you think the next time he's not going to insult somebody else? I don't know. I have a hard time seeing this guy holding back on going off on people. I don't think he can.
Well, I mean, I think there's also a pattern we're starting to see about who he's going after. Right. I mean, it's the bottom line is he's going after Susana Martinez. I don't believe he goes after her if her name is Susan Martin, to be honest with you. I mean, I think that it's a twofer for him. He has to maintain the cohesiveness of his support. And even though he's trying to attack, I think he's just thinking like, you know, I think he's reading that crap about there's 6 million white people out there who have never voted before. And now and they're going to come and vote for Trump. There's absolutely zero data to suggest that he is attracting more working class whites than even the other Republicans he was running against. I mean, if you look at
what's interesting is they did a really interesting analysis at 538.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and so they said that there was, like, I guess it was, I don't know if it was in 2000, I'm trying to remember when the data point was, 2012 or was it 08, they said there was a slight decline in white working class turnout. But the difference is they said even if Trump were to bring that, you know, 1 point or whatever it was back out, the Latino-Latina vote has grown by 2 points, and the registration has gone through the roof. The number of Latino-Latina vote potential voters has grown by over 4 million. And so, and in a number, and then it also depends on what states you're in, because a number of the states where the percent fell were places like New York and Utah, because it doesn't matter.
Right.
So in Pennsylvania and Virginia, it actually went up. So there's no extra votes to win in states like Pennsylvania. It said the only states where there were extra votes to potentially win on this score were Florida, Ohio, and Nevada. And he's right away lost Florida and Nevada by alienating the growing swath of Hispanic voters. So really the only one place where he could possibly increase his votes would be the state I'm sitting in right now. But then there's other groups he's alienated. That then you have to start counting, well, how many women has he alienated with stuff he said? There's certain in this state has one of the top 10 populations of Muslims in the country. Do you think those populations are gonna go for him after some stuff? I mean, when you start counting up alienated groups, he may have to keep insulting the Susanna Martinez's of the world. But that's going to, I mean, I don't see that as a win for him. That's going to cost him the election.
Well, I know. I mean, I think that, I think a lot of that's already baked into the cake, right? I mean, I think he is living in the same sort of bubble that a lot of the Republicans are. There are conservative writers out there. I don't remember the names of the guys, but if you go into the deep corners of like the National Review and those places, they're convinced there are 6 million white voters out there who Donald Trump is going to bring out. And I don't know what the theory is behind there, other than that, like, maybe there's just like, you know, I'm a huge racist and I just don't see anybody, really advocating on behalf of my racist ideas. And even though I had an opportunity to vote against a black guy in 2012 and 2008, I'm just waiting for a white champion that I can really embrace. And
right.
I just don't think those guys exist.
Well, I don't think, yeah, I mean, that's what this analysis said is there are some of them, but they don't exist in nearly the numbers.
No.
They're not 6 million of them. They don't exist in nearly the numbers in the right states. And then again, who he's losing from people of color, who he's losing among women. There also was an analysis they did. It was a college-educated whites, which is a rapidly trending Democratic group that Republicans used to win by, 30 points. I mean, they used to win it by enormous amounts. Romney only won it by 14. And now in the most recent poll, I think that they showed Trump, I think, was up by 1 point among that group. So, I mean, they've lost this advantage. He's getting clobbered, if you want to compare it to where he was, where past Republicans have been. Sure, it's been trending in the wrong direction for them, but this is an enormous jump. So you go ahead, find a million, if they're out there, 2 million white working class voters. You're getting killed among voters we actually know exist. You're losing them.
Indeed.
And so that's the thing. I mean, and none of these calculations seem to be made. I mean, I get for someone like Marco Rubio and Paul Ryan, they're caught between a rock and a hard place, and I have no sympathy for them at all.
Right.
So don't get me wrong.
Of course,
I'm glad. I hope the hard place smacks them across the face, quite frankly. But but what I don't get is some of the other Republicans who are the ones who are either former electeds, former appointed officials, other people like that that haven't come out more forcefully. Because I guess on some level, I still want to believe that there are people that are conservative and disagree with me. And surely I know some of them who actually care about this country. And I just can't fathom how you can sit there. Whoa.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Did an airplane just?
No, there was the audience just laughed hysterically at that.
Does the audience laughing? I mean, I want to believe, that there are conservatives out there that, especially. I mean, it looks like Hillary could end up getting the endorsement from someone like Robert Gates. There are people out there that I disagree with that on national security and the economy would sit there and say, those are the two things in life that even if you're doing very well in life, you need stability.
Right.
You know?
And well, that I think,
I just can't fathom.
Clinton speech, Clinton seems to figure, it seems to have figured that thing out with her speech this week. And let's just take just a couple of minutes, because I know you got to jump. Just a couple of minutes. On Tuesday, we have California, Montana, New Jersey, New Mexico, I think North Dakota and South Dakota, too, I think. Basically, all of the remaining primaries except for Washington, D.C. will take place on right. Tuesday. And the biggies, of course, are California and New Jersey. Between New the Jersey. Two of them, I think it's like 700 delegates. It is supposedly neck and neck in California. I haven't seen any New Jersey polls as of late.
That's what I was going to ask. It's, I mean, I get it. California is by far the biggest story here. But at the same time, I don't feel like I've seen polls from any other place. Do you even know what's going on in, let's say, New Mexico, which does count and is a state, North Dakota, South Dakota? I mean, they may not, you know, I have no idea. I don't know New Jersey either.
I don't know. But it's I haven't seen anything with New Jersey. Those results are going to come in earlier. I mean, we know at this point it's, you know, the Sanders, if he was going to win, would have to rely on the superdelegates basically switching and representing, you know, not voting with the majority of pledged delegates. I mean, more than likely. I mean, if unless something very right. strange happens in California, right now it's neck and neck. He could win by 10 points, and it still wouldn't be enough delegates for him in terms of the pledged delegates to amass. But it's a question of, you know, will he continue on to the convention? And what will he get in return for this? I mean,
well, I will say three things because I'm not scared of being wrong, as you know. I'm still the guy that predicted Allison Lundgren Grimes is going to beat Mitch McConnell.
Well, so there's still time.
I'm going to stick. There's still time for her to come back. So, first of all, I think Sanders is going to win California. Very close, but I think he edges her out slightly. I just have a feeling. I have nothing to go on.
I tend to agree with that, but go ahead.
I think the polling's very close, but I think he's going to win. Second of all, I'm glad he stayed in, and I think he absolutely is doing a service to everybody by staying in through the 14th. I think I don't want him to leave after the 7th either. Let D.C. have its vote and stay in through the very end. So everyone has had a chance. The third thing, you know, I'll say, which maybe is less popular, is I think unless he's pulled the delegates, you know, and won the 70% he needs to win or whatever, I think after the 14th he should endorse. Because I think at that point, you know, I in principle have always been against superdelegates. I always will be. I hope most people who are progressive agree. And, you know, I think what they do in the end should be an irrelevant part of this process.
Yeah, I agree.
So my hope is, you know, and look, I think he's going to win by a point or two in California. I think it's going to be close. But if I'm wrong, he wins the 70%, you know, and things go crazy and he gets there, absolutely. God bless him, let him do what he needs to do. But if he's, you know, if this comes out the way it looks like and he's behind, I mean, this, you know, I know everybody always says this is the worst threat in whatever many years, but Donald Trump is a unique threat. That's how authoritarianism and perhaps fascism comes to power in a place like this. And
well,
so,
yeah,
you know, stay in through the 14th. But I think after that, if you don't have the delegates, I think you get out and you endorse.
Let me put it this way, okay? I'll remain agnostic as to what he should do. I would be very surprised if he doesn't have the lead in pledged delegates that he doesn't leave the race after Washington, D.C., before the convention. I mean, people should remember, and in terms of, like, for people who are freaking out that this is somehow hurting Hillary Clinton, you know, just do the tiniest amount of research. Look back in 2008, Obama lost California by 9 points. He had a much smaller pledged delegate lead. Than Clinton has, not much smaller, but a smaller pledged delegate lead than Clinton did, and so I also think that, you know, in terms of Sanders, you know, he has, I think there's a reason why he didn't run as an independent, and there's a reason why he isn't saying that he's going to run as an independent, is because he understands that, you know, how our political system works. And so he's not going to do anything that is going to handicap her chances.
No, and I think you're right. So. I want to just be very clear that I'm not, I don't think you were implying it, but I'm not in the field of people freaking out at all. Right now, these polls, if you do any research, it's not even just the Obama back then, but in any situation like this, you will know that when a party's primary has not ended yet, and when you haven't had your convention and the rest, the polls don't mean anything. The fact, actually, that Trump is still behind in most of these polls by a couple points, and is only up in 2 points right now in Arizona, for example, and you know, in places like North Carolina, and the Democrats haven't come together, means he likely is in lots of trouble.
Yeah.
So I'm not freaking out about any. I'm just making the point that I think after the party's primaries are over, Trump, because of the unique threat that Trump poses, I think what would be healthy and a positive thing for the country and for our party is for everyone to unite and get on the same page in terms of showing people, because I still think there are a lot of people who've heard Trump say a lot of dumb things and kind of laugh about it, but haven't really engaged and paid close attention, because most people don't do what we do.
Yep.
Luckily for them, and I think that they need to have a narrative laid out for them about just how unstable, just how insecure, and just how angry this person is, and what a unique danger this person poses.
Cliff Schechter.
I'd like to see Bernie. Yeah, go ahead. I'll just say, last thing I'll say on it is Bernie has done, as we said, look at how we moved Obama on Social Security and other issues. Bernie's done a unique service to all of us with the campaign he's run. So let's now take that shiny new car and take it out for a ride and show that we can move Hillary to the left where she needs to be and beat the hell out of Trump with it.
Cliff Schechter, always a pleasure, buddy. Thanks for joining us.
Always my pleasure, too, man. Have a great day.
I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
All right, folks. Going to take a quick break. Do we have a Jimmy Reefer Cake song? All right. Why don't we play that Jimmy Reefer Cake song while I get Dave Hill on the phone, shall we? All right. We'll be right back with the inimitable Dave Hill.
Reefer Cake Rap, represent the state of Maine. Derigo, baby, legalization.
All you reefer haters better open up your brain. We're gonna legalize weed in the state of Maine. Marijuana's good and it's in high demand. You got a problem with that?
Take the back of my hand.
JK, violence is not what I preach. I just like smoking reefer at the beach. I just like smoking reefer cause it's good. Why the haters think it's bad, I never understood. I like smoking reefer just to chill. I like alcohol too, but it can make me ill. If I didn't stand up for the people serving time for it, what would I be but a mother and a hypocrite? Am I a socialist? No, I'm just a lyricist. Am I a progressive man? Yeah, sure, whatever, man. They should call me a civil libertarian, but most of all, just try to be a caring man. You all like that?
Dear I go. Pretty soon, then you all go.
We got the low population. I can't stop writing political songs. They just pop into my brain. And the brain is a muscle, and I recommend you use it. We're conditioned to self-centered crap and fluff in our music. Yeah, and that's not what I do. Sam Cedar, fade this out if you want.
Or better yet, get up in your booth and dance. Let me do these shout-outs.
Yeah, look out, Spos. Yeah.
Yeah, that was real cool. He had that song, I'm Awesome, and all that main play.
All right, that's a... What was the name of that song?
The Derigo Shuffle.
The Derigo Shuffle. Is that a town in Maine? Is that what that is? Jimmy Reefer Cake coming in with a little bit of Maine hip hop. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome you to not just a comedian, not just a rock star, but also two-time author. I think it's his second book. It's out now, ladies and gentlemen. Dave Hill Doesn't Live Here Anymore by Dave Hill is on the phone. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Sam. How are you today? Thanks for having me.
I'm well, Dave. You sound like you're like is this really you? It sounds like a recording.
Oh no, I'm practicing my speech. It sounds better than normal, right? I'm getting better at talking.
Are you?
Not to brag.
Well, what have you had? Have you been having talking problems?
Yeah, you know, I mumble.
Dave, you have.
No, I'm trying to. What's that? Wait, I lost you for a second.
Dave, you have a radio show that's on every Monday night for 3 hours. Is it? It's called the Goddamn Dave Hill Show, correct?
That's right. Yeah, Monday nights on WFMU from 9 to midnight. That's where I've been getting all my talking practice in.
But I mean, don't you think that
I'm not as good as that rapper?
Don't you think that you should have?
What's like, that?
Don't you think you should have done that like practice before, you know, actually starting the radio show? I mean, do you really think the radio show is like a good place to practice talking?
Baptism by fire, Sam. Yeah, just throw me in. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to play. That's how I did it.
Oh, I thought
Plus
you
it's WFMU and some of the, you know.
Right. It's community
radio.
A lot
of the shows on WFMU sound like the transmitter's broken, so.
There you go.
You know, I can get away with not speaking clearly.
Dave, I have to tell you that I think that you are the first person I've had on this program who is famous in Japan. Aren't you famous in Japan? Aren't you like a big star?
Oh, thank you.
Aren't you a big star in Japan?
Yeah. It's,
I'm not being facetious.
It's extremely difficult for me to... If we were to walk down the street together in Japan, we'd be trampled.
And
you might be spared, actually.
I mean,
I would encourage you to jump out of the way.
Do people say it that way? Walk down the street in Japan? Wouldn't it be a specific city?
Tokyo. We could start with Tokyo. Move on to Osaka, which is kind of the Chicago of Japan.
Right.
And then we, you know, keep going. Kyoto, Nagoya. But yeah, it's chronicled. My brush with fame in Japan is chronicled in my first book. But I don't get into it in the new book.
Well, what do you talk about?
It's already a foregone conclusion.
Right, everybody
I'm
knows.
I'm glad you asked.
Well, I mean, Tasteful Nudes was your first book. And
that was my first, yeah.
And is that sort of like a memoir or just a... I mean, how would you describe Tasteful Nudes?
I mean, it's a collection of essays, but the
reflective.
The thread of it is about my relationship with my dad in the aftermath of my mother's death. But there's other things in it. I wind up in a Mexican prison. It's a true story. That one wrote itself, I have to admit.
Yes.
And then I worked for Donald Trump for one day in 2004, back when he was a quiet businessman from Queens. Just a simple...
What did you...
I wrote celebrity ringtones for him.
You wrote celebrity...
So you could... Yeah, like he had, you know, he says, hey, this is Donald Trump. Pick up your phone. And they needed someone to write that, and I got the gig. So I went to his office and everything and hung out with him.
Just to get a taste of what he's like so that you could write the you could say, hey, it's Donald Trump, pick up your phone?
Yeah, they wanted... Well, no, they sent me a Donald Trump doll, which is currently in my bathroom. They sent me that, and they sent me two of his books, Art of the Deal and Art of Something Else. I can't remember what the other one was, but and that was to help me sort of get inside his head a little bit.
Did you read either one of them?
I did. Mm-hmm. I did, and that's what's made me the man I am today. No, I probably skimmed them. They were really nice. They had like gold embossed lettering on the front, which is always a good sign that a literary thrill ride awaits you inside.
So what did you write in terms of the ringtones? Like, what were they? Like, hey, you dirty Mexican, it's Donald Trump. Well, pick up your phone.
That's what I wish I had known. I would have gone with that. I mean, the weird thing was, it was right when The Apprentice was at, you know, The Apprentice was at the peak of its powers. And so
how did
I
get that gig, with all due respect?
No, that's a very reasonable question. just luck. Because there was sort of this tangle of corporations involved. There was a phone company like Verizon or somebody, and then, though I can't remember if it was actually them, and then there was Warner Music Group was somehow involved.
Are you killing an animal at your house? What's going on there? Is that your dog?
I'm emotionally distressing. My dog is here. I'm writing on a TV show for a few weeks. And it's at one of those hip workspaces, you know, where you can be free with ideas. And there's a beer and stuff. And so I brought my dog to work to see where that would get me. And so far, I can't say whether I would do it again. Because, well, you can hear, she's not into it.
She seems
normally she would just be at home watching New York One about now. But she's just clearly distressed.
She does.
That she's not, you know, there's people eating kale salads in the next room and stuff, and she wants to be doing that, hanging out with the crowd.
I understand. But
I can't. I literally have to keep her on a short leash, literally. But, the thing with Trump I wanted to tell you, though, I couldn't say, this is Donald Trump, you're fired, because he somehow lost the rights to his catchphrase. NBC owned the rights to "You're fired." So, if you need another reason to maybe question whether, you know, he's fit to be president,
right? How do you lose?
You know, I'm just saying, if he lost his own catchphrase, maybe he wouldn't be good with, I don't know, foreign policy. Just little things.
Well, I think, frankly,
it's just something to think about.
Why haven't you written that article?
Well, I did. It's in the book. I wrote it for the Paris Review. But,
well,
la-di-da. Yeah, not to brag, but.
Well, wait a second. Tell me again how you ended up with this gig. Tell me how you ended up with this gig, because it's hard for me to imagine that Donald Trump is sitting around going like, who's going to capture my voice? Who out there is going to capture
me? Yeah.
What comedian should I get to capture my... Oh, I know. Dave Hill, of course.
I know. Yeah. You'd think he would have gone straight for the Wayans brothers or something. But I was writing stuff for Warner Music Group, you know, like punching up executive speeches and things like that, and writing, you know, just little blurbs to put on websites. You know, this is a simpler time. I was just a pretty young thing, new in town.
Right.
And so then it was during the celebrity ringtone craze of the early 2000s.
I remember it well.
So they were doing, you know, yeah, I mean, everyone headed for the coast. You know, they left their families behind. Who's in the back? Are they laughing at something else or this conversation?
No, people.
My insecurities are, well, they're ever present, but I can't tell if you're just near someone who's watching like 2.5 Men reruns.
Yeah, we're always playing that during. That's on a loop in my office. No, people are enjoying.
I have no idea what's happening. Oh, okay.
For a guy who does a weekly radio show and podcast, you're really thrown off by this.
Well, you know, I'm just in a room all alone when I do my radio show. I'm just broadcasting into the ether, you know?
Right.
So,
I mean, it's not terrible. I got news for you. You're broadcasting into the ether right now, too. It's just that we're talking on the phone.
I know. Well, so you know how it messes with your mind.
I mean, a little bit. Fortunately for me, I get that at home, even when I'm standing in front of my family and talking to them. It feels exactly the same way. So,
excuse me. Not to keep coming back to this Trump thing.
Well, you haven't finished the story.
I'll give you an exclusive.
Yeah. Okay. Hold on for a second. Wait.
So I go to his
wait. Are you giving me exclusive right now?
I'll give you the exclusive, the bonus content.
All right, here it is. Hold on. I got the breaking news. Go ahead.
Okay, so long story short, Donald Trump really loved me, as you can imagine.
I totally can imagine.
And I go to his office, and everything's covered in gold. In the book, not to quote myself, but in the book, I describe it as his office as if a blind decorator were given an unlimited budget and told he'd never work in this town again. That sums it up. That's the sort of gems that await you in my new book.
But that's from your old
anyway,
book.
So, but he. Is that, no, this is from my current. Baseball doesn't live here anymore. The one I'm on the warpath for.
Fantastic.
Yeah. This is where you can read about my Trump encounters. But and here's the exclusive you won't find in the book, is that so it went really well. Trump loved me. He would only talk to me. There were like a dozen people in the room. And at one point he says, "Who wrote these?" That's my Trump impression. And and everyone's like, oh, thinking they're throwing me under the bus. They're like, "That guy, Dave Hill." And then he's like, "Oh, these are great. You're a really good writer." And so he would only talk to me. People would address him, and he would just sort of stare off into an imaginary horizon and wait for them to finish. And then he'd say, "What do you think, Dave?" And so I was having a great time. I showered and everything on this day. It's worth noting. And then, I get a call a couple of days later from, someone else from the ringtone concern, and they say, "We heard Donald Trump loves you. We want you to write ringtones." This is the exclusive part. "We want you to write ringtones for Madonna. Are you ready for the task?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And so I wrote a bunch of them for Madonna, and they called me back and said, and this is irony here. They said, "These are horrible. We hate them. You're fired." I did get paid
for both of them. Wow. So now
I got paid.
All right, I have two questions for you.
But I got out of the ringtone game.
Yeah, that's a tough business. I mean, it's there's no mercy shown in that business. Two questions for you. One,
you burn out.
One. Do you still have the actual script of the ringtones? Like, do you remember which ones he was responding to? Are they in the book?
There's a few samples in the book, but I think I have the document here somewhere. Let's have a look. Trump.
What are you doing? You're looking at a computer? I was going to say, I feel like you're...
On my computer.
I feel like you're probably just rummaging through old files at your Workshare space. Now, here's the other question. Are you supporting...
Yeah, no.
Are you supporting Donald Trump? And if not, why? I mean, you two have a personal relationship.
I know. You would think as well as... No, I think he's a horrible man. The one thing I'll say, no, I'm not supporting him at all. And let me be clear. No, I'm not. But I will say the one thing that gave me hope is that, and people, certainly other people have had this observation since, though I was the first ever, is he's very self-aware. And he's, like, that was one thing I sense. It's like, oh, this is, he's playing a character.
Right.
That was the sort of the one thing that gave me a little hope that maybe like at some point he's going to just say like, ta-da. Right. I was just kidding. Congratulations, Hillary. that's probably not what's going to happen.
It's just,
but he is more than anything else, just a performer. So I did like that about him as a performer myself. I was like, oh, we have something in common.
Well, you sort of
all we have in
you
common.
Sort of have that. Well, you have sort of that quality a little bit, right? Like you put on that mask at times.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's what I kind of admired about him. But now, I do think, let me be clear, he's human garbage. I don't have to say that.
Yeah, it doesn't really
I was in
You don't
want to
be on the wrong
recently.
Side of that divide where people are thinking you're an actual Trump supporter.
No.
Particularly if you're trying to sell a book.
No,
that involves reading.
Well, I know it's a tricky line to walk because, you know, I want people to know, I do not support him in any way, but I also don't want to miss out on all those sales from Trump supporters.
Right.
Who would naturally gravitate towards my book. I was doing an interview in Portland last week, and I think I was pretty clear where I stood on Trump, and it wasn't enough for them, and I had to just like really be horrible and say all sorts of bad things just because it was Portland. They could not handle that I wasn't being completely venomous the whole time
towards Trump,
about Trump.
Yeah, well, I gotta say,
Trump.
I got an IM that was complimenting you on the Trump impression. He wrote, "That guy has a great Trump impression. You could hear Melania in the background."
Yeah, I mean, it does. I do have that certain something. A lot.
So wait.
I would argue that we're at the peak. What's that?
Wait. You would argue that we're at the peak of what?
Of Trump. If you have a Trump impression, now is the time.
Yes.
I like to think that this is the peak of it. You know.
I
don't want to be wrong and like, oh no, actually the next 4 years is when you're really going to want it.
Right, exactly.
But I don't think that'll be the case.
Yes, it's hopeful thinking. Although I got to say, most of the impressions we do around here are from people who have not been in the news for literally sometimes decades. With that said,
like Basil Rathbone and stuff.
Oh yeah, we've got Wilkie. Someone does a Wilkie impression here, and
Wendell Wilkie.
Yeah, someone does a great Wendell Wilkie here, and Eugene Debs. I mean, a lot of it is political figures,
sure. Yeah,
Margaret Atwood. We do. Very obscure.
Yeah.
Ones. Yeah. I mean, it's also much easier
HR
to do because you don't
Haldeman.
Get, you know, yeah, exactly. You don't get as much criticism about them if they're really dated, but you do always got to start them with like, hello, I'm Wendell Wilkie here again. And then you do the impression. I mean, that's the, so tell me, Dave, so is this second one, it's another memoir? I mean, how much of a life have you lived?
Oh, it's nonstop. No, I mean, I don't think of them. It's more of a collection of essays with a theme,
and what
which
is,
I guess is a memoir, you might call it.
Yeah. What is the theme
no,
of this
standalone.
One? What is the theme of Dave Hill Doesn't Live Here Anymore? Is that just a?
It's about getting to know my dad, and that since my mom died and sort of our shifting relationship and. You know, along with my acceptance of adulthood, but still being, an adorable little boy. Yeah.
And
it's primarily about me and my dad.
Do you?
My dad's 83. Actually, wow. After this show, I encourage.
He's an old dad,
to
isn't
go
he?
On YouTube.
Is he your dad's quite
He's
a bit
83.
Older? Did he have you when he was old? Was he an old dad when you were growing up?
Oh, he was 72. Yeah.
No, he wasn't 72 when you were born. No. No, Dave.
That would make you 11.
He was a little older.
Well, I asked because my son.
Yeah, no, that doesn't check out.
My son is 46 years younger than me, 47 years younger than me.
Oh, yeah, so you're going to be in the same boat. Well, but, you know, it's great.
I pay
for a lot of stuff now. He's got plenty of money, but, you know, I'm a grown man. And I got to, you know, I pay for Panera and Applebee's and stuff. But, people should go on YouTube, search Stairway to Heaven, Dave Hill, and you can see my 83-year-old dad playing Stairway to Heaven on the piano.
Oh, wow.
Which I also write about in the book.
Well, I don't know.
But it's the best non-cat-based video on the internet.
The best non-cat-based. You know what you should have done? You should have thrown a cat in there, too, because then that thing would have been huge.
I know. Hindsight's 2020. Yeah, we just needed a cat to jump on the keys at some point.
Well, tell me.
Would have had one of those viral things.
Tell me a little bit about what it was like to have a dad that age when you were a kid, because my father is only less than 30 years older than me. And, Saul's, you know, almost twice as that. And so I'm just curious as to what was it like when your dad came to your high school graduation and everybody's like, why's grandpa here?
Oh, it wasn't like that, really.
Well, I feel I like think. It's going to be like with me.
I'd say he's only like a little bit older than some of the other dads, you know?
All right. Thanks for the insight, Dave.
It's not that big. I think you're going to be fine.
Is your book this insightful?
You know, because I think you're going to be fine.
All right.
Well, I don't want to give it all away. You know why? I can't give it all away for free.
But do you think that people read the book for the suspense quality? Like, how's it going to work out? Like, or is it more like the experience of reading?
Oh yeah. I think both. I think people, you know. I think people, you know, it's not a bunch of dick jokes. There are a couple dick jokes in there because I know people, if you don't throw a couple, they get disappointed. But no, I think it has a heart and depth and those things that you wouldn't really expect.
From you?
No, and I'm told it's, yeah, from me, yeah. You know, you think, well, it's just going to be a bunch of dick jokes, won't it? But no, it's got it all. It's got it all. I mean, I get covered in urine by a homeless guy in one essay.
On purpose or by accident?
No, it was an accident. I mean, not. It was no accident, actually. He did it on purpose. But, it was not even slightly an accident.
But it was not your plan to get covered in urine by a homeless guy.
No, it was, could not. Yeah, it was absolutely not my plan whatsoever. But yeah, that's in there. I go to a prison in Mexico, and that's the longest essay.
When did that happen?
International intrigue.
When did that happen?
That was a couple of years ago.
Did I know you?
A couple years ago, a buddy. Oh, yeah.
I wasn't aware of that at all.
I probably didn't. Well, but a couple of years ago, there was a story in the New York Times Magazine about a friend of mine, Bob Coogan. You can Google Robert Coogan, New York Times. The story will come up. He's a guy from Brooklyn, became a priest, and then wound up in a Mexican prison and as the chaplain. And the cartel guys killed the warden, and the Mexican government, you know, always being on top of things as they are. Said, well, sounds like you guys got this covered. We'll just be outside if you need anything. And so my friend stayed the chaplain in the prison, even though these murderous cartel guys were running the place. It was like Thunderdome. So there was a whole story about it in the Times. So I was like, I'm on the next plane. This sounds so fun. So I went down and I visited him. I went to the prison, and God damn it! I'm sorry about this dog.
Wait, so you went to visit your buddy?
No patience.
Wait a second. You went to visit your buddy, who was stuck in a Mexican prison that was being run by the drug cartels?
Yes. But and then the government, Mexican government, had their guards on the outside. So he was allowed to, you know, come and go.
And to have friends over.
And I figured, if, you know, have friends, you know, take your friend to Mexican prison day. And I went, and I don't speak Spanish.
Well,
which
that's,
is, you know,
probably for the best. You may not have wanted to know what they were saying.
No. Well, he thought it would be nice if I can make light chit chat while I was in prison. But I play the guitar, so he's like, you know, play the guitar as much as possible because you really want these guys to like you. And there was like an implied, like, you know, they'll kill you if they don't like you.
Well, that's probably.
So, but fortunately,
that seems to be. I'm not sure if that's implicit. I have a feeling in that scenario, it's probably explicit.
Yes, I think you're right now. I'm thinking about it. But fortunately, Mexican prisons are lousy with guitars. They're everywhere. So, I just grabbed a guitar as soon as I got in there and just started ripping solos. You know, because that's one thing I've learned. Every man.
It feels like an old Elvis Presley movie. It feels like an old Elvis Presley movie. Like Elvis Presley is just brought in. He's like, how am I going to deal with with this cartel? I know, just play music.
It worked. It absolutely worked. We left prison, and my friend Bob was saying a mass, so you know. And there's, you know, they're playing guitars in the mass, so I just start kind of like soloing along during the mass. And then he goes and hears confessions, and, you know, there's plenty to confess in a Mexican prison, believe me. So he's gone for a solid 45 minutes and leaves me with the inmates, and they are all coming in from the yard, and they're just playing chords, and I just start like soloing as fast as I can. And they're really getting into it, and this crowd is forming. And then we take a little break, and one of them looks at me and says, Hotel California? And I was said, coming right up. And then I played Hotel California. You know, no comedian can say they played at Hotel California in a Mexican prison other than me.
I'm confident. I'm pretty convinced. I mean, yeah, I think that's probably, true.
That I'm thinking about it, yeah, a couple names come to mind.
I don't know why that. but none that have written a book about it.
No. No one can take that from me. Well, you know, I've performed stand-up at Sing Sing a couple times. Sing Sing, you know, that's the prison upstate.
Right.
Very popular.
How do you do there?
And I've done stand up there.
How do you do when you do stand up at this prison? Do you honestly?
Honestly, I do really well which is sort of what made me want to go to the Mexican prison because you know I booked in 2009, just on a drunken dare I booked a show at Sing Sing because. I mean, you know, you've known me a while. You could see how me doing a show at Sing Sing wouldn't be the best idea on paper.
On paper.
I decided to follow through with it.
How much you get paid for a gig like that?
Yeah, on paper it doesn't seem.
Yeah, on paper it feels like.
Oh, that's on the house, literally.
I gotta say, like,
it's just my way of giving something back.
I understand. No, I understand. No, and that's nice of you. I got to say though that if I was to come up with two things that that I would not anticipate Dave Hill doing, it would be three things. It would be A, performing at a prison, B, performing at a Mexican prison taken over by a Mexican cartel. I can sort of see you at a Mexican prison still run by a warden. And I would say also writing ringtones for Donald Trump. Like I say, you've hit it, man. I don't even know. I don't know what you're going to do for your next book.
I'm also good at. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, let's face it, they may not let me write another book. The jury's out.
The jury is
Hopefully
literally
they
out.
Will.
Well, I but hope, listen, we...
The jury is literally.
We're putting a link at majority.fm to your book. And I don't see how people would not buy your book after listening to these stories. I'm actually going to buy your book after listening to these stories. And I don't, you know, I don't read anything that's not about policy.
You.
Oh, well, in that case, yeah. No, I'll support your book. Of course I'll buy it.
Well, I'm happy to send you a copy.
Well, let's not fight about this, Dave.
And I'm thanking your listeners in advance for picking up a copy themselves.
And are you doing any reading or tours or anything like that around, or are you done? Are you done touring?
Yeah, I've done a bunch of events already. I mean, I've done like I think 5 events in New York City. I've done a lot of the East Coast, but I'm still in West Coast. But
June 9th, you're going to be in Milwaukee.
Thursday in Milwaukee.
And then June 11th in Chicago.
Next Friday, I'll be in... Yeah.
And then on June 22nd, you're going to be in New York with Loudon Wainwright. You're going to be doing the summer residency at City 18th. Winery. July 10th.
Yes. I'll be June 18th. I'll be in... I will be... At Drawn and Quarterly in Montreal, June 18th, for your Canadian listeners. So,
And you're going to be in Britain.
D.C. In
September. You're going to be in London. We got a lot of British listeners.
I'll be there in September. I'm going to be there in August. I'm doing a week of shows in August.
Wow.
I need to put that on my website. You're reminding me.
Dave
and then
Hill.
I'm actually touring Switzerland in the fall.
Jesus.
Doesn't stop.
What a great life you lead.
I'm on a lot. What's that?
What a great life you lead.
Well, you know, I don't have a family and...
yeah, no, I know why. I know why you don't have
sadness,
a family.
Really, let's be honest.
Well, let's be honest.
I'm just trying
to make
up for that hole in...
I took a trip to the Brooklyn IKEA a couple of weeks ago. I'm still thinking about it. That was my excitement.
About getting rid of the family?
No, just going to the Brooklyn IKEA.
Well, you're still thinking of the...
Yeah, I'm still reminiscing on my big trip.
Pretty fun, right? But you have ant, don't you have chickens or something?
Kids. 2 kids.
Don't you have some sort of caged animals at your place? Or am I way off on this?
Dave Hill. Dave Hill Online.
I just think what I want to think.
Yeah, no, I don't, no caged animals.
That's my website, Dave Hill Online.
DaveHillOnline.com.
And
DaveHillOnline.com. The show is the goddamn Dave Hill Show. You can listen online via WFMU live on Monday night from 9 p.m. Eastern to 12 a.m. Eastern to midnight, I guess. And you can also listen to the podcast. Dave, it was a pleasure.
Thank you. And tell them to buy the book again, of course.
Buy the book again, folks. Dave Hill doesn't live here anymore.
Dave Hill doesn't live here anymore.
All right, Dave. Thanks for doing this. See you soon.
Yes.
All right, talk to you later.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Man, oh man. I hadn't heard about any of those stories.
I really like that guy. He's very funny.
You guys have similar cadence. I don't know if you know that.
Yikes. I actually think that's one of the funniest parts.
A second or two to respond. I mean, he takes a little bit longer to respond than you do.
And we saw him at the Podfest, the New York City Podfest.
Now I feel like you're deliberately talking like him.
No, I'm not.
Okay,
what are you talking about?
All right.
No, his show was on was at the Podfest after you appeared.
That's right.
On the Podfest, and I thought that he was very hilarious, and he had a nice outfit.
There you go. I bet you he'd be very excited to hear you say
that.
He
might not have a family, but he has nice outfits and a dog, and that's something I can relate to.
That's just like, I don't know. I don't know. Matt is even over there going like, what?
But we're not. I don't listen to what Matt says. Matt's opinions have gone wild. They've gone wild.
Let's go to the phones. We should go into the fun half. Sorry, folks. We will say goodbye. Just remember your membership make this show possible, ladies and gentlemen. It's always that weird talking to Dave Hill in a way, right? I mean, it's just sort of like he's got such a very distinct rhythm. Everything sort of feels like you're now moving in slow motion.
You know who else takes advantage of that slow rhythm?
Who?
Dr. Ben Carson.
Dr. Ben Carson does too. That's right. How dare you?
That guy's not even funny. I mean, seriously. People out here bragging about things that I do, I don't even talk about. Stop tsunamis. I've been in a Mexican prison. You go to a Mexican cartel prison and not come out gay.
Hey, let me tell you something. Let me tell you something, folks. If you have not become a member, then you'd missed 90% of our coverage of the Libertarian debate. And based upon what people have been saying, you've made a huge mistake with your life.
Did you see what Benjamin Dixon tweeted out about us?
No.
He said, the civil rights segment with Sam Cedar and Michael Brooks is one of my all-time favorite Majority Report segments ever.
Which one was that?
One where I know... It was
on the Libertarian debate.
On the Libertarian debate.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yes.
Where they booed Gary Johnson.
Where they booed Gary Johnson. And then it culminated in an hour where, like, John McAfee being like, build my own road.
Oh, right. My own
black chicks in my own hotel.
Yeah.
That's what you do to open your heart. Well, man.
So, folks can get that by becoming a member, because when you're a member, you can also, it's not just about listening to the future shows. You can go back to the past shows and go through the archive. And it's readily accessible on our apps and on our website. And so do yourself a favor. Take the quarter that's jingling around in your pocket. And you're always walking around going like, God damn it. How would I ever get rid of this quarter in my pocket? And then you've put it into a meter, and then you have one there again the next day. Well, I know how you can get rid of that quarter that's bothering you so much. Become a Majority Report member. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. And if you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. Same with jet.com. We have a link now for jet.com. Just go to majorityreportkickback.com, majorityreportkickback.com, click on either one of those links, buy your stuff, bookmark it, and buy your stuff through those links. We get a kickback. All right, quick break. Going to head to the fun half, 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. I can see we have members IMing me complaining that they're not getting commercials. But the member show is commercial-free. Now, occasionally, if we got a good deal, we'll let you know. But all right, we'll be right back after this.